is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on... Oh, dear. We seem to have lost our guest. I'll tell you what, Bird.
Yeah, do you want me to talk?
Do you want you talk and read a couple of emails, okay, and I'll try and get her back on the phone again.
Today's a really, really important day, Wayne. I'll just talk to you.
Okay. Like.
It is the anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's speech, I Had a Dream.
Oh, okay. How many years?
It's the 28th of August, 1963. Can you believe I'm...
Wow.
Now, the reason I know this is, you know, I've been doing all my research and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's actually something that I was, like, looking at. So I was thinking, well, what is this speech? What does it really mean? And I really wanted to get into the depths of it. Do you know what? It's 17 minutes long, the speech. He was only given 5 minutes to talk. He wasn't the headline talker. He was actually part of 10 speakers. And they did a walk onto... do you want me to stop talking?
No, you carry on. I'll put my mic up as well.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that I've got Gillian there. Gillian, are you with us?
I am, yes.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you join us this afternoon. Thank you for that. I don't know what happened. I lost you there. I think I lost my connection.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. But Bird was in full flow, taking over from me while I tried to get you back on the phone.
Welcome, Gillian.
Hello there.
So, Gillian, thank you so much for joining us. For those that don't know, Gillian, you were one of the co-founders of the Anne Frank Trust.
I was, yes, way back in 1990 with family and friends of Otto Frank, Anne Frank's father.
Okay. I mean, were they personal friends of yours before you started the trust, or were people that you got to know through the activity of starting?
Two of them were. Two of them were, because they lived in Bournemouth, which was my hometown. Mm. And but the other one was Eva Schloss, who was Otto Frank's stepdaughter, Frank's posthumous sister.
Mm.
And she lived in London, so I had the first opportunity to meet her in 1989. Mm. When she came to speak at an Anne Frank exhibition that we arranged in Bournemouth, and as they say, the rest is history. The trust started from my home in Dorset in 1990, and then when I left 2 years ago, I retired after 26 years. It had grown to 35 people, educating over about 40,000 people a year in really some of Britain's toughest areas, the really most challenging communities with economic problems and societal differences. And also we worked in prisons, what we still do, we work in prisons.
Right.
And so it was quite a journey.
Okay, so that was actually going to be my next question, is kind of what was the rationale behind the Anne Frank Trust? What was your focus?
Basically, to teach new generations the story of Anne Frank, how one teenager who had so much to give in life and so much great potential, how she was killed through irrational hatred and prejudice.
Mm.
And the beauty of Anne Frank is that we don't only have lovely photographs of her, and we see what she looked like as a girl, but also we have her words and her feelings and what it really feels like to be the victim of irrational hatred.
Mm.
And so this is a message that we can really pass on to new generations of young people. We work in schools all over the country.
Yep.
And really, you know, that we're all different. We're all different. How boring this world would be if we were all the same.
Sure.
But irrational hatred is based on the grounds of race and who you were born.
Absolutely. As you say, we're all different, but underneath it all, we share a common humanity.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So you founded or co-founded the trust, and you ran it for 26 years until you have a well-earned retirement. and you grew the trust, did you say, to 34 people?
Yes, around that.
Fantastic. Well, people are going to be lucky enough to hear more of your story, because you're one of the main speakers at the up-and-coming Women in Business Luncheon, I do believe.
Yes, that's on the 25th of September at Bradbourne House in East Malling. And I know that when the Kent Women in Business are selling tickets on their website. Mm. I think they're about £36, something like that.
Absolutely.
I believe there's a speaker also. There's another speaker as well. So it's really good value for money and a lovely networking event as well.
Fantastic. And I know loads of people are looking forward to hearing from you and hearing about your story. And I should just mention that you are the recipient of an MBE, I do believe.
Yes, that's right.
When were you awarded the MBE?
2010. Okay. It was very exciting, yes. And, I've received, I've been lucky enough to receive other awards as well, humanitarian awards, etc. And can I mention that I've just got my first book has just been published.
Oh, well, okay.
And it's about, it's an astonishing story, actually, and it's something that's never been told. There's been loads of books about Anne Frank, but this is really about the incredible thread that she has woven around the world over the last 30 years that I've sort of been involved. And in some of the most surprising and turbulent places in the world, and how she's really learning about Anne Frank, learning, you know, going to see exhibitions about her and learning programs about her, has really brought people back together from really opposite sides in some intractable wars and conflicts. And so I tell the story of how for us, and a story about, you know, how the social fabric of Britain has changed so much over the 30 years that I was involved in this work. So it's called The Legacy of Anne Frank.
Right.
It's just come out, and it is available on Amazon, but also directly from the publisher's website, which is Pen and Sword, who are the publisher.
Right.
So, yes, it's all very exciting.
Cool. Well, thank you for that. We've kind of got a bit of a bad connection, Gillian, so I'm going to let you go, but thank you for that. Give us one more shout-out for how people, from the title of the book.
Yes, they can get it. It's called The Legacy of Anne Frank by Gillian Warnes-Perry, and it's available on Amazon and also directly from the publisher's website, Pen and Sword.
Fantastic.
So very exciting. Yes.
And you can hear Gillian, as she said, at the Women in Business luncheon, which is taking place at Bradbourne House in East Malling, and that's on the 25th of September, and I think there are a couple of tickets left, so do kind of check that out. And you can find that on the Kent Business Radio website under the business events link, and you will find it there. Gillian, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Paul, and I have to tell you that I have recently moved to Kent, and loving living in Kent.
Oh, fantastic.
Always wanted to live in Kent. So.
Well, welcome to the county, Gillian, and we're pleased to have you, and we hope you enjoy your retirement living here in the county with us. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
And we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks ever so much.
All the best. Bye-bye. Ciao.
Bye-bye. Lovely Gillian Penny, MBE, co-founder of the Anne Frank Trust. And as we said, you can hear her at the Women in Business luncheon in September.
It's a busy lunch.
Yeah.
It's about 60 women in the room.
Absolutely.
So it's worth going.
Okay.
So if you don't know about networking, then
The other speaker we should say is Kim Arnold.
It is, yeah.
And I have met Kim before, and Kim is an absolute guru on marketing. So two very interesting people to hear from with totally different stories. So.
And how funny about you talking about a book? Anybody think we'd know about that?
What, books?
Well, just saying, we were just talking about it, weren't we? So it's very interesting.
I've read one.
Excellent. Mine.
Beano.
No, you read mine.
I read your book, yeah.
Thanks. Huh. Anyway, as we were saying, Wayne...
I'm still in the room.
As we were saying, did you know this, Mr. Andrews? Today, 28th of August in 1963, was the day that they walked upon Washington, and we had Dr. Martin Luther King speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
I Have a Dream speech.
I Have a Dream speech, yeah.
Now,
yeah, absolutely.
And this is totally... So where I've been doing all my research for my book... Did you know that he was only supposed to speak for 5 minutes? He wasn't the headline speaker at all.
Nope.
His speech went on for 17 minutes. This is how sad I am. 17 minutes and 2 seconds. And he was speaking from a piece of paper until 12 minutes and 2 seconds. That was the first time he mentioned the words, "And I Had a Dream."
Yeah.
That's the first time in all the speech.
That's the bit that... Everyone remembers.
And he said it for about two, maybe 90 seconds, and then he went on to something else. But yet, that one moment. Now, that one moment didn't just happen then. He'd spoken that 1,000 times before.
Yeah. It's interesting, all those kind of things. It's like, quite often, people will go, it's not the Gettysburg Address, you know, if you speak too much. Without really understanding that Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address was one of the shortest speeches ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And people go, it's not the Gettysburg Address, you know. But it actually wasn't a long speech. It was only 11 minutes long.
Yeah.
You know, so these things are quite funny how they capture the public's imagination and become have a life of their own that isn't even naturally...
Well, a lot of that's happening through films and bits and pieces where they're sort of depicted in a certain way, and that's how a lot of people actually pick up various parts.
It's the myth of it, isn't it?
Yeah. Funnily enough, I use a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. in a lot of my talks that I used to do, and I always finish with one of his quotes, which is actually one of his lesser known quotes, but I think it's the most powerful quote ever, which is, if you're called to sweet streets as Michelangelo painted, as Shakespeare wrote poetry, as Beethoven composed music, sweet streets, so all the hosts of heaven and earth sing hallelujah, there goes the greatest street sweeper that ever lived. It doesn't matter what you're called to do in life, if you do it with total passion, you'll be successful. And I love that quote. I absolutely adore that quote, and I use it time and time and time again. Mm. But it's one of the quotes that hardly anyone knows, you know. And, all you know, I had a dream and all the rest of it, people can kind of half-quote it at you. But, yeah, interesting stuff.
It's fascinating. Mm. Go and I suggest people go and listen to that talk. Mm. Go and watch. If you're a speaker and if you're going to go onto the speaker's platform, go and watch how people speak. Watch how, when he's reading from a piece of paper, there's no connection. The minute he raises his eyes from that piece of paper and somebody says, tell them about the dream, he then goes off into it. Really fascinating. And he only does it for a short amount of time. You've got such a small window, and it's that moment that you can capture a whole legacy.
But it really follows on from what Giles was saying earlier. It doesn't need to be a long speech, but engage with the audience.
Absolutely.
Look at people. And keep it short and sweet and concise and understandable.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm going to read a tweet and then we're going to talk to Wayne.
Nice.
Yeah. Andrea Barker, Andrea BC Coach on the Twitter, she says she's running an A to B 6-week course at the end of September. Confidence to be your best. Oh, sorry, confidence to be your best you. If you'd like to come along, you can find out about it, book your place and all the rest of it by going to andreabarker.co.uk/workshops. Or you can follow her on the Twitter, Andrea BC Coach, all one word. And that's the A to B 6 weeks course, Confidence to Be Your Best You. So do check that out.
Cool.
Cool. Let's welcome Wayne. Although we have been chatting all the way through the show.
Yeah.
But we ought to do it formally. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome Wayne Hodgson. Wayne is the Managing Director of Red Eagle Recruitment, and he's also the founder of the Red Eagle Foundation.
That's right.
I don't mind which one do you want to talk about first?
Well, do you want to talk about a business and then how that's...
Yeah, let's do that.
And then, because charity is a newer project of mine. Sure. So, Red Eagle Recruitment. Me and my wife actually founded the business in November 2004.
Okay.
So we're coming up to 14 years in business. I've been in recruitment since August 98, so 20 years. I know I don't look old enough.
I was going to say, he doesn't look old enough, does he?
The words out of your mouth. recruitment's kind of all I know now, really.
Right.
But we started the business together from our home spare bedroom for the first 3 months, didn't have an office. So that sort of potentially captures, you know, reminiscences with some other people that might be listening with small businesses. So we had to gain financing and contacts and clients and stuff. So we set up our first small office in Folkestone shortly afterwards in January 2005 and started taking on some office staff to support us. And the business has grown from there, really.
Okay. Did you specialise in any particular area of recruitment?
We both worked predominantly in the blue-collar market. So we focused on that because that's an area that we know and understand. So that tends to be factories, warehouses, HGV drivers. That has always been a big part of what we do. And actually, as the years have gone on, food processing and food manufacturing are probably over 50% of what we do in business.
I think you do a lot of work with Thanet Earth as well.
Thanet Earth is one of our largest clients. So there's a greenhouse, 6 greenhouse complex down there and a packhouse. And we supply some staff into the packhouse, but we are the sole agents for all of the greenhouses. So we have an on-site office down there now supplying the greenhouses throughout the whole year. And those particular greenhouses, you talked about automation earlier, they're not like any greenhouse.
I was just going to say, you said they got a couple of greenhouses. Well, people ought to know it's about 200 acres of greenhouse, isn't it?
It's pretty big. Yeah. I mean, each greenhouse is something like 8 hectares or something, I'm not sure. But it's, Yeah, I mean, they reuse the rainwater from the glass, gets reused, and the heat from the greenhouses is reused, and they actually put electricity back into the grid from their sort of system down there. And all of the temperatures sort of auto-controlled through sort of moving glass plates in the roof to control the temperature. Although all the picking and the vine work is done manually by hand. Mm. Actually, when products pick, they've got these automated rails throughout the whole greenhouse system. So these trolleys kind of move up and down the greenhouse autonomously. You punch a code into it, and it wanders off on its own, takes itself to the warehouse.
Uh-huh.
So it's quite interesting.
So you pick and put it in the trolleys.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
Yeah, and then you enter your details in. You know what you've picked and maybe what worker number you are, and it sends it off to the warehouse all on its own.
Fantastic.
Yeah, pretty clever stuff. Cool. So yeah, we started working with them probably about five years ago, and we've worked with them as they've built new greenhouses. We actually worked to supply labour to help build the greenhouses through manual, local labour. And we focus on recruiting within the local area, specifically for that site. So, yeah, it's pretty big business.
What are your thoughts and feelings? Yeah, you know that I have a fair amount of experience in the marketplaces as well. What are your thoughts and feelings on where we are from an employment point of view? You know, as each month goes past at the moment, unemployment statistics are released, and each month unemployment falls, employment goes up. We've got 32.5 million people in full-time employment now. We've got skill shortages.
Yeah.
Last time I looked at the ONS database, which was about 3 days ago, we had 829,000 unfilled vacancies.
And that's only going to get bigger at the moment. We see it continuously. So for us, and I don't just think it's a skill shortage, I just think it's, you know, because we recruit in, not all of our work is at the unskilled sort of semi-skilled level, but a big part of what we do is, and even at that level there's a shortage. We can
just shortage of bodies.
This isn't necessarily about upskilling workers to be able to do the work, and in all due respect, a lot of the work we're doing, you don't need necessarily to have experience in it, but because you train on the job.
Yep.
It's just really people that have got a willingness and desire to want to go and do that type of work. So that's the problem. So, yes, unemployment's falling. So the people that are still unemployed, we need to be able to understand why they're still unemployed.
Yep.
Is it because there's a lack of desire to work, or an inability to be able to do certain jobs, or a reluctantness to come off of maybe a benefit system that by going into maybe low-paid, unskilled work, they're not going to really see the benefits of going into work. So there's a number of things I think need to be looked at really to try and address it.
And I guess, certainly in the picking and packing world, a lot of that is seasonal as well.
It can be. I mean, for instance, the greenhouses tend not to be. That's all year-round production.
Sure.
But certain other factories that we work in maybe are producing a certain product that is, sells more during certain parts of the year. Salads, obviously, during the summer.
Yeah.
Sausage rolls, mince pies, obviously Christmas, etc. So, yes, there are trends. And again, we've always, and for a long time, relied heavily on Eastern European labour.
Yep.
I don't know if there's a ban on the B word, but Brexit obviously is having an impact already. And has
Are you starting to see that?
We saw it from when the vote first occurred. You know, there was actually an immediate impact of some workers going home and not as many coming over. That relaxed a little bit because there was kind of no information about what was going to happen. But certainly there's a number of factors. So it's the uncertainty of Brexit, and also the fact that our pound is very weak against the euro now, and there's other opportunities in different European countries for workers that are looking to go to other countries. So for instance, you know, if someone from Poland or Lithuania or whatever wants to go and work in a different country, they can now go and look at Germany that's got a higher they've increased their minimum wage. It's being paid in euros. It's closer to home for them. They can maybe travel back and forth at weekends, etc. So the there's not as much incentive maybe to come to the UK for the work.
Yeah, absolutely. And in general, not just talking about Brexit and European workers, but do you have any view on where you see things going? We were talking earlier about automation.
Yeah.
Do you see that the situation that we're in With regards to people shortages, do you think that will be a spur to more automation?
I think some businesses that have already, you know, got that foresight and maybe the finances in place have already taken some steps already towards additional automation. They may have had a 5 or 10 year plan anyway to move towards additional automation, but they've had to bring it forward. So we've seen that in some factories and certainly big warehousing units that are using, you know, more in-depth kind of AI processes for order picking and bits and pieces. That's already taking shape because people are understanding that actually there is a shortage of available labour.
Cool. Okay. So let's kind of move that forward now. Well, just before we go off on that, I mean, now's your chance to get a plug in.
Oh, good.
If people, what are you looking for at the moment?
To be honest with you, we've got, as I said before, we focus a lot of our energies on unskilled and semi-skilled labour. We've got a commercial and permanent division that also does HR, finance, engineering, commercial, permanent placements. Check us out on redeagle.jobs. So all of our live jobs are on there, as well as the Jobs in Kent website, which we use for all of our vacancies. That was an unpaid plug. So all of our jobs are there. So that can range from someone coming in and preparing salad or picking tomatoes, working on the line, all the way up to senior management positions. So we recruit across the board.
Cool. Good. So thank you for that, Wayne. Let's move forward now to the Red Eagle Foundation.
Yeah.
You made reference earlier to the fact that you'd had a previous charitable...
Yeah, so I, a few years back, a couple of guys were doing some fundraising activities. They'd called themselves Donations with a Difference. I don't mind giving them a plug still. I'm very much a supporter of them. But they were two brothers that were doing various fundraising events and wanted to sort of structure it a bit better. Mm. They approached me. I came on board and helped them turn their kind of fundraising activities into a registered charity with a charity commission. Right. And we grew that charity organisation to run events and to support, children from disadvantaged backgrounds. And also they started towards the end of my sort of chairmanship, moved into a lot of supporting homeless in Folkestone and Dover, etc. Right. So that's where my experience of running the charity came from. But an opportunity came with speaking to the other directors of Red Eagle, and it was really a good time for me. Donations with a Difference wanted to move down different routes. I wanted to focus more on disadvantaged children and children with disabilities. So I've set up Red Eagle Foundation. I've used our business name as a way to try and springboard the charity because we've got a good brand name within Kent.
Absolutely. Yep.
So we want to use that to sort of springboard the charity. So we only set it up this March. We ran a golf event as our first event in April, May, raised just over £12,000, which was amazing.
Okay, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Probably nearly spent all that already on various grant awards that we do. The good thing with having it as a name, we provide all the support for any admin costs. So literally every penny that we raise, we use for outbound grant, awards. So, if there's any admin costs for running charity, the Red Eagle recruitment business picks all of that up. Mm. Plus, we're looking to donate profits every year from the Red Eagle business into the charity. So why do we do what we do? Running a business, as you know yourself, can sometimes be quite insular and selfish, almost narcissistic in some points, because you have to focus on your own goals, your own beliefs and your own desires to
Absolutely.
Achieve.
Yeah.
This allows us as a business and for me personally to come away from that mindset and focus time, energy and money on to doing things for other people. So that's where the kind of mindset come from. The reason we're focusing on children with disabilities and from disadvantaged backgrounds is really from my experience of working in the other charity. That really, I got to meet, as the kind of face of that charity, I got to meet all of the families and the children directly. I met everyone that we gave grants or equipment to. So I saw firsthand what a positive impact
Absolutely.
It made.
Yeah.
So that's really what I wanted to focus. So we're working with schools and occupational therapists, and we're getting to meet families with children that maybe have disabilities where they need a specialist bespoke piece of equipment, but because it's bespoke, the NHS won't fund it, because the NHS will only fund pieces of equipment that can be reused in the event of a child's death or growing out of it. So that's where we can step in. And so we've helped fund buggies, wheelchairs, scooters, little bikes that have been specially sort of made for children. We've also helped schools fund redevelopment of rooms within the schools for special reading projects for children that have maybe come from disadvantaged background and had problems with their parents or carers in the past. Yeah. So that's the areas that we're focusing on. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I was having a conversation at the weekend with some people about this from different parts of the political spectrum, and we were discussing big corporations and the fact that Apple has become the world's first trillion-dollar corporation, and it now has more money than most countries in Western Europe.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, which is crazy, isn't it? And people were saying, well, what are they going to do with it? And I said, well, there's only two things. There'll come a day, and I do think this will happen, when a corporation buys a country and says, we've got more money than you, we'll pay off your debts and we'll own your country. But along with what Wayne was saying, you do see, like Bill Gates, you know, eventually you make so much money that you just can't possibly spend it. Yeah. You can't do any more with it. So you have to do some good with it.
Yeah.
And you've got, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates have got the Gates Foundation, $54 billion US dollars in it.
Yeah, amazing sums of money to be able to do good work with. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And I think more and more business people, you know, most of us aren't at the level of the fangs, as they call them. But, you know, we've all built successful businesses. And I think most entrepreneurs get to the point where they go, do you know what, I want to give something back now.
Yeah, but without that, and I say that's really what led us to do what we do. So the other directors are keen to do more work with us. We're actually looking to recruit additional trustees for the charity. So now's a good platform to talk about that.
Absolutely.
Again, what we don't want to be is just only have trustees that are within Red Eagle Recruitment, because we do want to run this charity as a standalone. You know, we are registered with the Charity Commission.
Right.
You know, we do have to run it completely autonomously. And we do want to try and attract people from the business world in as trustees to help us kind of grow, raise more funds and work and you know, increase the work that we're doing.
Yep.
So, yeah, anyone out there interested, then get in touch.
Oh, cool. That's good. So if you're a business person or you've got something to offer in that world, then please do get in touch with Wayne.
Yeah, yes, yeah, exciting thing to do. We can, like I say, from fundraising events and being part of actually organising those fundraising events to attending it, or to actually dealing with the families that we're helping and get involved with those projects. And you know, it's a great thing to be able to do.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you get drawn into it as well once you start getting involved with things like this.
Yeah.
And I think you hit the nail on the head, Wayne, with saying you actually meet the people. You meet the people who are involved, and once you do that, you get drawn into this because you start to see the issues that people face and the kind of things that you need.
Yeah.
And it can be, you know, for entrepreneurs, it's very frustrating when you look at things like this. You go, you know, but this kid or something just needs that. Why doesn't somebody do it? You know, but, you know, most things that are provided by the state are done by computer. It's processes. There's no humanity in it.
Personal.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no empathy in regards to how decisions are made. So,
yeah, exactly.
As I say, with us, we can, you know, we want the charity to be able to stand alone. At the moment, our business can help support it to make sure we can fund any of the projects that come through that maybe our individual fundraising events haven't, you know, don't have enough for. But ultimately, we want to try and run it, you know, so it is self-funded through the money that's raised and can support all of the projects that come in.
Mm.
We do some great work with a children's centre in Sittingbourne called the Orchard Centre. And that does a lot of work. It's probably got 500 kids on their books that they look after, ranging from different forms of muscular dystrophy, etc. So I've been up there and done a talk. That was an unpaid gig. You won't know what they are, Paul. But I went up there and did a talk because I'd done a lot of work for the previous charity. And again, so they engage with us a lot now. So they've even held small coffee mornings and done fundraising for us because they know we're always going to help them and support all of the families that they put through to us as well.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate last year to get the support with the Giving Tree up at Bluewater, which I think's run by, you know, also supported by other media outlets. And we went down there and made sure we got a present to every single child last year as well.
Wow.
I didn't don the Santa outfit. I didn't go quite that far, but it was a lovely thing to be able to do. I'm thinking about doing it.
Absolutely. Be careful
about doing it this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Although we have secured, although we're looking to recruit additional trustees, we have got a patron.
Right.
Eddie the Eagle is our patron.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So we met him last year. He came down and opened our new head office in Folkestone. And, you know, we spoke to him about what we wanted to do with the charity moving forward. So he's agreed to put his name to us and support some of our projects. So, yeah, we're trying to secure a date with him, and hopefully he can come down at Christmas and get involved with maybe some present.
He can wear the Santa suit.
Yeah, he doesn't mind getting dressed up and doing all that kind of stuff. So yeah.
I did a thing a few years ago where somebody talked me into they did a thing on Twitter in association with a radio show. I can't remember what the deal was. It was basically you had to raise a certain amount of money, and whoever raised the most money got to pick an outfit for me to wear to do a Zumba class with Tracy Crouch, who's the Minister for Sport. We were going to do a Zumba class together, and whoever won it actually made me dress up in a pink tutu.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. I think I might have seen some of those pictures going around. They're quite vivid.
It. Yeah. Yeah. You loved it.
Did I?
Yeah.
I've still got the tutu.
And he's wearing a pink shirt today.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah, I like a bit of pink.
It's obviously a favourite colour of his. Yeah.
So, cool. So,
we've got our own website, so for the foundation. So that's redeaglefoundation.org.
Okay.
If you go to our normal redeagle.jobs website, there's links to that on there as well. But as I say, as an independent charity, we've got our own site. You can see all the work we've done on there, from the grants that we've handed out and the families we've worked with, the fundraising events we've done, and the fact that we're looking to recruit trustees. So that's redeaglefoundation.org. Have a look on there if you are interested in talking to me about what it is to be a trustee, what the responsibilities are. Just ping me an email through the website and we can have a chat. No, you know, no obligation, but we can have a chat. Fantastic. And see if it's something that you can commit to.
Fantastic. Have you got anything planned in terms of a next fundraiser, or what are you thinking about next?
Well, we've got a potential quiz night lined up for later in the year. Okay. We're talking about a five-a-side football match. There's always golf tournaments we're talking about. I like to play a bit of golf myself, so that's an easy one to organise, because I've got a load of guys that I know will come along and do those. But again, what we're looking for is maybe other people or businesses that want to look at us as a potential chosen charity if they're running or they want to do some corporate social responsibility stuff within their own firm.
Yeah.
They might want to run coffee mornings or do a small run or hold a bring and buy sale or whatever you know, any little fundraising, it's little quizzes, bingo games, whatever. It may raise £100, a couple of £100, but we can help them promote that, you know, brand it a little bit for them, help them run some of those events, and the money goes to us, and we can make sure that they're involved where that money's been spent, so there's some direct correlation between what money they've raised and where the money actually went. You know, raising money for some of the bigger charities, it kind of, you send it to them and you might get a thank you and a certificate, but you don't really know where that money was used. I can demonstrate exactly where that money was spent.
I'm with you on that. I'm a great believer in local charities and supporting local charities and things that you can get your hands on so that you can see what you've done. You know, some of the big global corporate charities, you just lost sight completely of what they're doing.
There was all that bad press around how much the CEOs were earning from these charities and all the rest of it. And that's, again, look, we're a lot smaller, but no one gets paid any money. No one claims expenses. There's no costs.
Yeah.
Any T-shirts, posters, signs we make, we all pay for that at the business side of things. You know, every single pound we raise is spent on good causes. So.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
More power to you. Give us one more shout out for both the jobs website and the foundation website.
Okay, so Red Eagle Recruitment is www. redeagle.jobs.
He's loving it today.
I'm after a job.
Yeah.
If you're a bird, I'll be bloke.
Bird and bloke. The bird and bloke show. That'll work, wouldn't it?
Yeah. There's a show now.
So, yeah, that's redeagle.jobs for all recruitment, and redeaglefoundation.org for the charity. So, thanks for letting me come and talk about it.
It's an absolute pleasure, Wayne. It's always a pleasure to see you. Thank
Hello?
You.
Yeah, bird wants to chat.
Yeah. Yes, I do. I want to
ask me anything too testing.
No, I really want to ask a couple of questions about employment, really.
Okay.
And how we can support people to become employed and enjoy the experience of it.
Yep.
The first thing is, and it's listening to you, so you're saying a blue collar unskilled.
Yep.
That makes me go, well, I've got lots of skills, but they might not be of use.
Okay.
How do we get people to be passionate about becoming an unskilled? Do you know what I mean?
I can understand. Yeah, some of the wording maybe can be changed when people are advertising. So we don't necessarily advertise we want unskilled workers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the term that we use when we're discussing certain sort of levels or sectors of work. But for instance, factory operatives, process operatives, etc. Now, I don't know if how I can make you feel passionate about it until we can get you into the workplace and understand that even though maybe these jobs are seen as, well, it's £7.83 an hour, which is, you know, the minimum wage. so people go, oh, how can I be passionate about that? Every single manager, line leader, team leader in these buildings all started as the process operative or the factory operative.
Yeah.
You know, and there's actually very high paid senior people within food manufacturing. And I mean, it's such a specialist job, and they can move around and they can earn a lot of money, but you've got to get in and get the skills. And that is done by coming in at ground level.
You've got to start. It's funny you should say that. I do a lot of work in schools with a program called 30-30. And
everyone wants to be a manager.
Absolutely.
You can't start.
That's my millennial joke as well. It's my millennial joke. A friend of mine's got a daughter that's in her second year of university looking for interim work. So if you need a managing director, she's available. I talk a lot in schools about the whole world of work, and chief executive of an academy trust said to me, yeah, but the trouble is, Paul, it's the parents need to know as much as anything else. So I went along and did a talk to some parents, and I was just getting fed up with listening to the you know, so many people don't understand the recruitment market, they don't understand the job market, they don't understand how to get a job, and they just don't look at it in the right way, in my opinion. And I just threw this out. I said, well, your kid ought to work at McDonald's. And they all went, that's dreadful.
Yeah, he's better than that, or she's
and I said, you do understand that McDonald's do more than just flip burgers.
Yeah.
But you have to
They've got a fantastic trainee management scheme.
Absolutely.
It's second to none.
And their logistics and supply chain and all the logistics management stuff. And I was just saying, you know, think about someone like Sir Terry Leahy, who's just retired as the chief executive of Tesco's. He actually started as a shelf stacker.
Yeah.
You've got to start somewhere, and you've got to learn the business bottom up, no matter what business you go into. Even if, you know, it's not just for unskilled jobs. You know, if you're a lawyer, you don't come in and just go straight into court and start berating someone.
No.
You know, you make the coffee, you do the filing, exactly. You learn the ropes.
Yeah,
but that's the whole thing. People aren't doing that.
But that's why I think a lot of it is down to desire to work. And I don't want to use this as a platform to moan about the benefit system, because I'm a believer that there should be a benefit system, but I don't think it should be there so that it's a choice, a lifestyle choice, where people say, oh, if I go to work, I'm only going to be 30 quid a week better off, so I'll stick on benefits. I think the benefit system should be there so you can fall back on it, and you can live on it whilst you're in and out of work, or at least have a more flexible system. So that, for instance, if you're on benefits, you come to me, you want a job. At the moment, as soon as they start work, they have to go and sign off.
Yeah.
So straight away, they lose their council tax, they lose their housing benefit, they lose their weekly job seeks allowance, et cetera, et cetera. Whatever benefits, it all goes because they've signed off, declared they're working. 3 days later, something happens, the job's not for them, it's not suitable, blah, blah, blah. They then have an absolute nightmare getting all their benefits back.
Yep.
And that actually frightens people coming off the benefit system. So
absolutely.
If there was a more flexible way, so they could go to the you know, benefits office and say, right, I'm starting work, maybe report their hours every week, or provide a payslip or a timesheet to show what they were doing, and reduce or amend their benefit system accordingly, it'd be much easier to get some of these people that are sort of stuck on benefits back into work. So I think a lot of them are just frightened that they're going to lose all the benefits, be worse off, and they don't even then try.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's too risky for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've had this conversation with the DWP so many times, that says, you know, you now are preventing people getting into those jobs because the whole system doesn't work. I mean, they started looking at universal credit as some kind of way of dealing with this, but then they lost sight of what they were trying to do, and it became some big amorphous bloody admin thing that was pointless as well. The problem is, like so many things in this world, according to me, is these things are done top down and centrally controlled. There's no humanity in it. There's nobody knowing people on the ground. Do you know what I mean? They're terrified of people ripping the system off. But if you allowed it to be done locally with people that knew who they were dealing with, and they go, the trouble with you is you're not really doing the work. Yeah, I know you.
Yeah,
but whereas you, I know you're desperately trying to get a job, and I'm going to help you do it. Because that's missing from the system, we've got to the point now in this country where we have full employment, but 1.2 million people unemployed. Now, not all of those 1.2 million people are in this position. I estimate it's about 400,000 people that we're talking about here. But those 400,000 people, no one in their right mind would take a job with the chances of losing their benefits. No, no one would do that.
And look, let's be honest, the work that I'm providing is, we're a recruitment agency, it's agency work, it's not guaranteed.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, best will in the world, our clients may say we need people ongoing, but I can start someone, and after a few days, maybe something changes within the factory or their processing or their orders, and I have to, reduce orders or increase them, etc. And that's difficult for someone that has to have a certain level of income.
Mm.
So again, if the job's not what they deem as permanent or guaranteed hours, again, they're reluctant to come off their benefits because they're worried that they're going to be short at the end of a week or a month.
Absolutely.
With regards to paying bills, which I get.
Yeah.
I'm not blaming them as an individual.
Absolutely.
But the system needs to be different to allow them.
So is the desire there? That was the next thing I was going to ask.
Well,
is the desire there?
Well, it's half and half. There is desire, but then there are those that don't have the desire to work. Yeah.
But we
see that a lot as well.
Yeah, but they, in the overall numbers, they're a vanishingly small group of people. Mm. Those people that are long-term unemployed because they choose to be unemployed and don't want a job no matter what are a vanishingly small number of people. Don't believe the Daily Mail about things like this. They're a vanishingly small number of people. It's a much bigger number of people that Wayne's identified that would like to work but can't because they'd just be stupid to do it, practically, it's just not practical.
But someone that's getting maybe £700-800 rent paid every month, get the council tax paid every month, they get £100 a week, living, what job seekers allowance, I don't know what it's called these days. You've got to earn a fair lump of money, take home after your tax and your NI. You've got to earn, to be able to counter all of the benefits that are, some people are on. So
family benefits work out at a net 24,000 a year.
Yeah. Well, if you're working 40 hours a week on 783, you're not earning that. There needs to be something where those benefits can be flexible, can be paid in part or top up, so that it's a fair way and get people back to work. Because then that may, a lot of what people say is, when Brexit comes, what are you going to do, Eastern European works, if they stop coming in? We haven't really touched on that because who knows what's going to happen, because still haven't given us the rules of what's going to happen next March.
Yeah.
We're all in limbo over that.
Yeah.
And I get told, you need to recruit more British people. Mm. I'd love to.
Yeah.
So make it able for me to do so by changing the system. So.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Wayne, thank you so much for that. Thank you for joining us. We're kind of fast approaching the end of the show. We've got some other bits and pieces that we need to talk about. Amanda's been on to me.
Always.
And corrected me.
About?
There's been some changes to the speakers platform. They've now pushed out the time limit, so it's not the 30th of August, it's now the 4th of September. So you've got until the 4th of September to submit your bio for the speakers platform. And we're not going to pick the four on the night, we're going to pick them before the night, but we'll just announce them on the night. Yeah. So I just needed to tell you that before I got into trouble. What you got?
Well, I've got, it says, "Hello, Paul. I've been involved in a campaign to raise awareness about entrepreneurs' mental health.
Mm.
Anxiety and depression are common amongst entrepreneurs, but hardly spoken about. Meditation is one of the tools you can use to keep your mind relaxed and your thoughts under control." Now, this is at the Modern Mystery School. It's offering a free meditation sessions, and this is because they're big fans of meditation. And they go on to their sessions, which is on www.eventbrite.co.uk. Well, I can hear us now, Wayne doing it.
Yeah.
/ Modern Mystery School. Just go on to there. Now, this is from Rafael De Santos. Great bloke. I love him, love him, love him. And he's massively into supporting people who suffer from mental health issues, depression especially. So go and check it out.
Cool. We've had a tweet from Supply My Business about Wayne saying, "Fascinating to hear Wayne's insight into the UK labour market with manual workers. Reliant industries now moving towards process investment rationalisations as a result of labour shortages." So thank you for that.
I've got a fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Kim Arnold, who's one of the other speakers of the Women in Business Lunch, has been on saying, "Not long now, come and hear me speak about how to spend less on your marketing and still get amazing results." So thank you for that, Kim. And I'm sure that'll be absolutely brilliant. And a lovely Tracy Ferguson has been on. She's saying she can't listen in live today because she's doing a careers seminar in London, but she's going to listen again tonight.
Yeah, she loves listening to us in the evenings, and then it all starts and kicks off again.
And she does, and she'll send me messages at about midnight tonight saying, "Oh, I don't agree with what you said there, Paul," or whatever.
I love it, and that's what I think. We do. we're not here saying this is right. We're just saying this is what I believe.
I'm right.
And I believe that I'm right. But I also like you telling me I'm not, so let's have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
And that's well, we like to talk about edgy subjects, I think.
Sometimes.
I stay away from edgy subjects.
I want to tell you about this. Following on from the success of last year's Gorillas and Gowns charity fashion show, Butterflies Events is excited to announce the Chimps and Tricks charity event. It's taking place at the Port Lim Hotel near Hythe on Friday the 19th of October from 6pm till 11:30pm. And they're raising funds to support the Aspinall Foundation Megafauna Project. It's going to be hosted by Amanda Flanders of Butterflies Events and, oh, me, of the Business Bunker radio show, in collaboration with Jane Macklow Photography. Guests will be welcomed with a glass of bubbly and canapes in the stunning setting of the main house before moving to the marquee for a mixture of great entertainment, mouth-watering food, an auction with lots of exciting pledges, and then dancing the night away with the fabulous Jason Allen Sway and his swing band. Amanda has gathered together a great variety of Kent entertainment for the evening to excite and delight you. There are three amazing musicians who will be working the room, blowing your mind with their skills, and there's also a couple of casino tables to test your luck. During the evening, you will be continuously supplied with the most delicious food from the fabulous Chives caterers, and then you'll get the chance to bid on the auction pledges that take your fancy. Our entertainment, who are all donating their time for free, are our magicians Stu Weller, Rob Scott and Neil Edward. The casino is supplied by Dan Smith at Ace Casinos, and music by Jason Allen Sway and his swing band. We're raising money for the Aspinall Foundation's Megafauna Project, a project established to reintroduce the regionally extinct mandrill and a reinforcement to the low numbers of chimpanzees in the Bateke Plateau region. The tickets are just £55 a person, or if you book a table for six or more, it reduces to £50 a person. Every single penny goes to the fundraising. And to book, butterfliesbusinessevents.co.uk/what's on.
Cane and Beer 2018 Curry and Beer Night, Thursday the 30th of August. My goodness, that's this week. I still can't believe it, you know. I'm like, oh, is that right?
So nearly Christmas.
I know, 18:30 in the evening at Ginger Restaurant in Hayes. That's Ginger Restaurant and that's Bromley. So a relaxed, informal way of networking for a reasonable cost of £25. That's £25 entitling to you a free drink, a starter, a main course, bread and rice. Oh my goodness. So that's www.wayne.
Oh, World Wide Web.
info@caneandbeer.co.uk.
Fantastic.
You were nearly going to say it then, weren't you?
Yeah, well, yeah, no.
It's taking the job, love.
No. I'd just got another tweet.
Go on,
it's
what
from Who's Queen.
Okay.
You got to see it. She's got a gif of a kitten in headphones. It's just.
Who has?
Who's Queen? The Lauper, L-A-U-P-E-R, 1977, right, is the Twitter handle. It's actually Laura from Tenterston Toilets. That's one of those.
I've known for ages.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she says, I like to listen to the Business Bunker live, and today I am, she says. But she's got this gif of a kitten with headphones on, which is
really,
you can see it, yeah.
Got she's modelled that on you, bud.
Yeah.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
I tell you what.
They look similar, don't they?
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know where these people, one, find the time, or two, find them. No, I never get a gift like that. It's great.
Fun.
I love
it. You talked, Paul, about the Portland Zoo. There's an event on there, if you don't mind me mentioning.
No,
it.
Cool.
22nd of September is the South Beach Festival,
right,
and we're supplying all of the bar staff labour to that event.
Right.
So we are still looking for bar staff for that day. Can I give my phone number?
Yeah,
as
go
well?
For it.
So it's 01303 851133. Asked to speak to Kirsty, so that's bar staff for the South Beach Festival. It's a 12-13 hour day. You've got to be 18 or over, but it's going to be a great fun event. Get involved, help out.
Fantastic.
I'll tell you what, Wayne, you've just told me now where my children would be going, because they've gone, oh, Mum, we're going to South Beach. I'm like, awesome. I'm thinking that's
miles away. Well, you could come and do a shift, get paid, and keep an eye on your kids at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they're
what's
all
not
over. No, I don't want to know what they're doing.
No, you're probably
right. But I love that, because I'm like, oh, probably they're going to Lynn.
And the guy that's singing at your event that you mentioned, Jason Allen Sway, he's a top bloke. I had our 10-year dinner anniversary a number of years ago for our business, and he was our singer on the event. Top lad, Jason.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. I want to tell you about this. This is another opportunity. Hi, Paul. My name is Maria Tully, and I'm a female golf professional from East Sussex. And I'm writing to inquire whether you know any local company who would be interested in partnership deal with me. More and more companies are getting associated with professional sportsmen and women, and there are great advantages for both parties. Some of the benefits to your company will include your logo on my clothing, golf bag, etc. If you have any golf days, I'll be present and will teach your clients, give you mentions on social media and in the newspapers and more. Sponsorship is a key to my success, and with your help, I hope we can make things happen for both of us. I'll be happy to meet with and chat or phone anyone that wants more details. I'll keep this short, as there's nothing worse than reading too much. All I say is, instead of paying the taxman the money, you can invest in helping a female golf pro achieve the dream of being on the LPGA, and that's Maria Tully. If you'd like to get in touch, do get in touch with me, and I'll put you in touch with her. Fantastic.
Mm.
Cool. So we're almost at the end of the show now.
What am I going to do with myself for the rest of the afternoon?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Have you got anything else that you need to read urgently?
Not urgently.
Cool, okay.
Well, do you want me to read something?
If you've got something, you can.
Well, it's just about... You'll have
to be quick, though.
Oh, I don't know if I can do that, because Joel's told me I had to speak really slowly.
No, we'll go for it.
Precisely. All right, so, yeah. So, we've got Building Business with Purpose, and this is at SOC Ent Kent. It's hosting a key social enterprise conference on the 23rd of November. You need to register at www.kentbusinessradio.co.uk, and also the 3030 Business in School
program. Yeah, this is important.
That you were just talking about. Help us bridge the gap between school and business, and surely this will help you as well.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Exactly. So as business owners, managers, join Business Bunker Radio Show at Jobs in Kent. Come and FSB Kent to inspire the next generation. So the next event is on the 5th of September, which is next week, at Wilmington, or the 21st of September in Rotherham.
Rotherham.
That's the one.
Yeah. Cool.
Every time it looks like something different.
I know. That's Kent for you. Well, thank you. We've reached the end of the show.
So
I just need
to write a book. You just can't read it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just need to tell you about the Business Bunker Extra Show on Friday with Corpse now, with the lovely Amanda Flanders. And this week, her co-host is Gemma Faircough-Haynes of Orchard Employment Law. And on the Business Bunker Extra at 11 o'clock on Friday, their guest is Claire Harvey, who is an action coach. So do tune in for that here.
Why don't I ever get a shout out?
Because you never asked me for one.
Oh.
Anyway, we've reached the end of the show. Yeah. We've reached the end of the show. We'll be back next week for another Business Bunker show. A massive thank you to this week's guests, the lovely Mr. Giles Brandreth, Gillian Perry, and the fantastic Mr. Wayne Hodgson of Red Eagle. So thank you so much to Bird for co-hosting the show. As I say, we'll be back next week. Bye for now.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.